Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 49.
Now I'll go with that.
The other thing I was going to say was, how many times did you actually go over the top?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Once. What do you think of that in five years of war? Yeah. I mean, in a battle, oh, hell, I went over the top a lot of times and different odds and ends, like little raids and odds and ends messing about. But then I only went in one battle, that was the Battle of Arras.
Yes. Well, sorry, so you went over quite a few times on these raids to try and get prisoners?
Well, yes, wandering about, like that listening post, they call them, and that. And
yeah. Can you describe that, what that was like? Because I don't think you've ever described that. You know what?
There's posts in between, you know, there might be a clump of trees in some parts, especially the Somme, where down there they were a long way apart. Well, now, there was a clump of trees down there, which they call the Seven Sisters. And you used to send listening posts out there, and they used to send people out and all, and then sometimes you ran into one another. But what the hell they were done for, I could never understand. But that's what they used to call listening posts. But as I say, I wasn't there very long, you see, because what happened, you see, they attacked us, not us, us attacking them. That's what busted me up, you see. I was the other end of a battle, not the one going their way, it was them coming to us.
Did you ever go on any one of those raids that actually tried to get into the German front line?
No, I never went on one. Mm. I told you, Tal, where I went out and thought I was going to catch one, didn't I? No. That was a laugh, that was. I'm sure you've had that, Tal.
No, I haven't heard the one about the balaclava, for example.
It's on that one.
No, it might be on one of the ones that hadn't come back yet.
No, it ain't. You've had it. Yeah. Well, them first two you had. It may be you didn't play the other side.
No, I've got them all. I've got all the notes of it. I can't remember.
Both sides.
I mean, I've heard so much, it might have been on there. Yeah, you're right, I suppose, yeah. But when you caught it?
No, when I went out and found them rats in that dust pit, that tea can.
No, I haven't heard this one, no.
I'm sure you... Oh, no, do you want me to tell it?
Yeah.
All right, that'd be a laugh, anyway. That was at Plug Street, and we're very close there, you know. That's where I got wounded. We're only about 100 yards apart. And it was a quiet night. I was Lance Corporal then. And it was a quiet night, and you know, in the night you have to take two on and four off, stand on your fire step at night, and you know, keep looking round. And the 4 hours off, if normal, you sit on the fire step and have your 4 hours sleep, you know, with your head on your lap. Well, the chap on that night, one of my section, he was looking over, you know, looking over the top, and he called me to him. He says, Corporal, he said, I reckon there's a Jerry down here. That was in the barbed wire, you see, the barbed wire's at the bottom, just over the parapet, and they know there's your barbed wire all along. He says, there's a Jerry down in this barbed wire, kid. I said, no. He says, I reckon there is. He says, you look. And we looked. And it was a moonlight night. And a bit of a moon, not much. Well, the clouds kept going by. And then the cloud cleared and the moon shone, what bit. And I could see this white face. I says, oh, well. I says, you're right, there is a Jerry there. He says, I know there is. He said, you listen. We listened and I heard a bit of shuffling. I thought, blimey. Well, then I said to him, I says, go along and fetch Pinky Brown. So he went along the trench and fetched Lieutenant Brown. I told him, I said, I don't know, I reckon there's a Jerry down here in the wire. I says, see what you think of it. So we stood quiet as a grave, you know. looked down and he could hear some shuffling. He said, I believe there is. And then the moon come out again a little bit and it shone white, see? He says, it's right. And he said, go over and see what it is. I said, all right. So he told the chaps each side of where we was, you see, about 20 or 30 or 40 yards each side of us. Told them, he said, don't do any firing because at night you have your rifle on the parapet and every now and again you loose off a few rounds. You know, just help keep yourself awake, never mind. Then they may hit one of them that are filling sandbags of theirs just the other side. So you loose off a few rounds in the night. So he went along, he said, don't do any firing for a little while till I tell you. So where this was, this Jerry, we went along a bit, and this Pinky Brown said, he said, you give me your rifle. He said, and you take my revolver. I said, all right. So he gave me a leg up, and I slid over the parapet sandbags and got down to the barbed wire, and I crawled gently along, you know, and I was fretting him on anything else. I crawled gently along, I thought, oh, blimey. And just before I got there, I could hear, you know, I thought, oh, hell it isn't. Just as I got to it, I heard a hell of a scruffle. And when I got there, do you know what it were? Some silly bugger threw an empty biscuit tin over with some grub and it were full of rats. Yeah. No, I didn't hear the last of that. You can just imagine what happened after that. I'll sit cowering off at the odle. Every now and again, I'd say, God, blimey. Old Lord bloody near one of VC with a catching a couple of rats. You can tell where I had to go through the hoop for that.
Yeah.
Silly little things, you know, but it seemed as though one of the Jerrys had crawled over, you know, because we were very close then.
There were rats everywhere, weren't there?
Oh, blimey, you had them in your pack, and then on anything else you went asleep.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. They was everywhere. You see, there was so much food laying about. See, and they were laying, all the dugouts had got, where there was a few rags or a sack or something, and there'd be bits of grub and the rats would run about. That was almost time. I'll tell you what I've done. Time's out of number. I used to, when I was on, I'd turn on at night to help keep awake, I used to stick a little bit of cheese on the end of my bayonet and lay that along the sandbag. Bit of cheese on the end and then watch and you'll see these rats come up, nibble, nibble, nibble around the cheese, and I used to press the trigger and blew them away. But the bullet went their way where the Jerrys was over that side.
Yeah, were you, if you weren't on guard, were you allowed to shoot rifles? I mean, what was it?
Oh, you could fire a 1,000 rounds if you wanted to. Do as you like. Oh, there was no restrictions. No. No, well, you see, you used to do that. You could do, you see, in the trench, you'd got boxes of ammunition alongside your rifle ammunition. Well, you see, then you'd got your, I don't know, it was 150 or 200 rounds on your, in your pouches, right? And then for your, when you use the, two or three clips up, you see, you'd put your hand in the box and fill your clips, and then I always used to keep some loose in my great pocket in case it were cold, you know, and frosty. I used to be a job to press down in the chambers, so I always used to keep some nice and easy and loose in my pocket, the clip nice and easy to use. And yeah, well, you could, at night, you see, when you was on, every now and again you might stand there perhaps for 10 minutes or a quarter of an hour and begin to get a bit drowsy, and then you think, oh, I don't know. Your rifle, point your rifle straight across to them, you see, where they was. See, and then perhaps you say, oh, just press the trigger, bang, you know, and load up, another round, bang, and load up again and lay your rifle there, and that kept you awake. And if by chance any of them happened to be filling sandbags behind the line there, just a matter of half the length of this street, well, they'd had it if your luck was in.
Mm-hmm.
See, so they were wasted and they wasn't wasted. Mm-hmm. But you could have as many as you like. There was no such thing as don't get far in tonight, see?
When your lines, you know, when you were in Plug Street Wood and the lines are only about 100 yards apart, did you have to keep your voices down in the trench?
No, shouting all over town.
I know, no, I meant
shouting
between each other, you know. No.
It made no difference. They knew you were there.
No, but I mean, in terms of instructions and so on, you know.
Oh, no, there was no instructions. No instructions given. No. You knew your job. Your job was there to stop an attack.
Mm.
So that was your job. You was there to stop a German breakthrough.
Mm.
And there was only one line, you know, at Plug Street. A very thin line there.
Would the... In a normal day, obviously, as you say, you're only in one actual battle, but in a normal day, how would the casualties come about then?
In a normal day?
Yeah.
Why, at Plug Street Wood, you put your head up. I bet you wouldn't have... Well, now I'll just show you by my hand. Now then, now suppose that was the level of the top of your sandbag. Your head was here. Now, as quick as this, you'd had it. As quick as that. By putting your head up and looking.
Mm.
There's several Brattle chaps got killed there, you know, the first, our first casualty there, a Wolverton chap, old Bertie Spong. He was there and he put his head up and, because he was just a little bit vacant, poor old Bertie was. He was no chicken, you know, to join the Terriers, but, of course, old Bertie, well, we hadn't been at Plug Street a day. We moved there from up Armentier's way. We hadn't been at Plug Street a day. And we were all told, them as we relieved, told us, keep your heads down, boys, said it's, you're hellishly close here.
Yeah.
Don't run any risks, said if you want to have a look, put your head up quick and back quick. And whatever, when you do that, don't put your head up in the same place again. Move along if you want another look. It's as so sharp as that.
Mm.
Say, well, poor old Bertie, you know, to see no man's land, you know, barbed wire in your front of your trench and 100 yards across there, and that's their front line, and barbed wire, well, old Bertie, look, you know, it's gone.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, I've told you several tales in there, but yeah. Looks well. Yes.
Yeah, so did your artillery sort of loose off a few shells every day?
Yeah, no. We were very, very short. Very short of shells at that time. I can tell you one thing, I know it's right, that early there, the Germans had got loads of shells. Germans never seemed short of shells at all. There was a... Oh, I know I'm right. Don't know where they put it in them tapes. But there was a house there, behind the German lines, a bit of an old house. And there was a sniper there. See, they used to have snipers, that's why you didn't put your head up. See, these snipers had all got set points with telescopic sights, and they used to set their rifle dead on a spot within a yard or two, perhaps, eh? So that if within that yard or two, if that sniper had got that part covered, well, all he'd got to do was press the trigger because the rifle was set on it. But anyway, behind a little while behind, I remember, I know I'm right, there was this old cottage and there was a sniper in there, see? And we knew it. And they signalled back for the artillery to blow this place to smithereens because there was a sniper in it. And do you know what they said? The message come back: we can't fire on it today. We've used the day's issue up. The day's issue had been used, and that was only perhaps 3 or 4 shells. That's all they'd got. And what happened was, we had orders then for the whole lot of us to set to at the dead second and fire up, fire at this cottage with rapid fire, with rifle fire. And all of us fired. I don't know how many rounds we had to fire. You whizzed off your 15 rounds straight off. I don't know how many rounds we fired, as hard as we could, till it knocked the bricks out and knocked half of it down with rifle fire, because we got no shells. Now there's a difference. Now that was the beginning of the war. Got no good, not no shells. Now at that Harris affair that I've told you about, the shells stood along the side of the roads there where there was batteries of guns. There were shells stacked like little hayricks. Thousands and thousands of shells. Every gun was stacked high with shells. As I told you, the Germans told me it. Well, the Germans that were captured prior to the Battle of Arras told us that a British barrage was hell. Terrifying. They said it was hell, a British barrage was. So many shells, you know, and clusters of them. They stood wheel to wheel. And blimey, I ought to know I was in it. That's why I would bust. That lot would bust. I told you, didn't I?
If we can go back to where we left the story, and say, imagine you haven't told it to me before, because it's just, I've got a good tape here and a good microphone and tape recorder and so on, so I want to get it sort of for good. We left the story with you arriving in the trench.
In that trench, when we held them, just cut that hole in the centre and they went by.
That's right, yeah.
Well, now... We settled, after they'd gone by, it was still quiet, no rifle fire, nothing. All quiet, not a sound. We settled down, well, there were the four officers. They sat together, like side by side, on the fire step. That was a German trench, of course. Sat on the fire step, and at this end, I'm looking at it as though I'm looking at the, as we sat. Now this end, I was at the end, and next to me was a kid. I didn't know, there was all different regiments, but this kid there was in the signal corps, signaller. And then there were the four officers, and these other two chaps, the other side, the four, all sitting in a row at the bottom of the German trench. Well, this kid next to me, we got, you soon get friendly, you know, in a war. Me and him got, you know, got talking to each other, and always remember he'd got a what's it in his bag, in his pocket, tin of coffee olay or cocoa olay, that's it, sweet stuff, like Nestle's milk made with coffee, cocoa in it. So we had that, we had it between, half of it between us. He said, look, he said, oh, we'll save this for later on and then we'll have the other half later on. I said, all right. Well, now it was as quiet as a grave. Well, it must have been, I should think, getting on, like as a rough guess, around about 10 o'clock in the morning, perhaps. And then all at once, you never heard such a hell of a roar. Oh, shells flew everywhere. Roar. Well, you know how a train goes rushing to a station. It like that one massive roar. Shells and the dirt were flying. Oh, hell. We got her down the bottom of this German trench as far as we could get. Our heads right at the bottom, low as we could get. And you could hear a big one above all the others. You know, you could the ordinary shrapnel bursting in the air, and then there was the high explosive shells that knock a shell hole just about so as you can get in, like the one as I was in. And then there was this big one. Well, one of them big ones, where they drop, you could put a tram bus, or you could put a bus in. Well, you could hear this big one, see, what they call traversing, see, along the line, perhaps a couple hundred yards that way. You'd hear a roar and a crash and all hell. And then you'd wait perhaps 20 or 30 seconds, then roar, crash again, getting nearer, see? And then you saw how tight. Now, that's on top of all this other rubbish. Then, ooh, just gone the other side, see? Crash again, and a bit farther. And so that kept on, you see, like traversing. They were that what them what they call them big naval guns, garrison naval guns. Hell of a big shell. And eventually, it had to happen. Hear it coming along. Next one close, and then whoosh, crash. Well, I said, after the time, you know, that's the last blooming shell they fired, and yet they are dropping amongst us, because it wasn't the last one. See, I was flattened out. Well, next thing I knew, I was smothered in dirt and rubble. All rubble, I brushed all about my neck and off of my tin hat, and I stretched my arms first. I thought, oh, they're both on. And then I stretched my legs out, and I thought, oh, they're both on. So I got my legs and arms anyway. And brushed the dirt off my head. I put my hand under my face. That was full of blood. I thought, blimey. That made my nose bleed, I expect concussion. And my foot, that hurt. That's all it hurt, really, and my face was sore. And this kiddie next to me, this signaller, me and him, our heads were close together. I knocked him on the arm. I said, are you all right, kid? And he never spoke, never answered. I said, are you all right? Never answered. I thought, blimey. So I knocked the dirt off his head, and he'd got a piece of shell clean through the centre of the top of his helmet and was sticking out under his chin. Now then, so he'd had it. So I crawled up and stood on my feet. My foot wasn't too bad. I got a bit of shrapnel through the back of my shoe. And there was three officers standing there, these three officers. And everybody else were laying flat out. Now, these three officers hadn't been touched. Wasn't that funny? Three officers hadn't been touched. Well, one of them, I went up to him, naturally. I went and joined them. So one of them said, I thought he was, you know, a fairly brave chap to say it. He said, I'm going out, he said. I'll give myself up and get the stretcher bearers. Get some German stretcher bearers. Well, now that another officer, he says, all right, he says, I'll come with you as well, right? And the third officer, he said the same. He says, well, I'll come as well. I thought, blimey, all right, that was the only one on my feet. So, of course, naturally, I said, if you're all three going, I'm coming as well. I said, I'm not stopping here. I said, you three are going, I'm coming. So this third officer, he turned round to me, in hell of a temper. He says, you stay here. He says, and bind these wounded up. I said, I don't know anything about it. I said, I don't know anything about wounded. I didn't know anything about it. He said, you bind them up. I said, no, I said. I said, if you're all going to fetch German stretcher bearers, I said, They know what to do. I don't know what to do. Well, he drew his revolver, eh? He rubbed the muzzle along my forehead. He says, you attempt to follow me. He said, I'll blow your brains out. I said, well, I said, all right. So I never done no more. I stood there. Now, that first one, as we said, he'd give himself up. He went first. And as soon as he closed, because the front of the German trench had been blew in, see, so it wasn't, didn't have to do any climbing. He just sort of sloped up, you see, where it'd been blew in. He climbed up, he walked, off he went. Well, within a second or two, next one got up, followed him. Another second, another one followed him. I waited a little while, I can't remember now how long ago what it is. Well, it, as well as I can remember, it might have been getting on perhaps half a minute, I wouldn't be sure. And then I heard it go, grrr, ta, 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 grrr. I thought, well. So I waited a minute. I crawled up where they'd all been knocked in and had a quick peek over the top. They all three lay dead. So I crawled back in the trench and this other officer that had been flattened out, he turned to me, he says, they're dead, ain't they? I says, yeah. I said, they're all dead. I said, well, I said, I don't know anything about ambulance work. You always used to carry your own, field dressing, they call it, in your tunic pocket. That's bandages and cotton wool. So I said, I don't know. I said, but I'll bandage up as well as I can. I had a look at him, the officer. As far as I remember, he'd got his leg smashed. I know he'd got his wrist all smashed. That's it, his leg and his wrist. And he got a bit of shrapnel stuck in the top of his nose. That's right, I remember it now. And I looked at the next bloke. He'd got his leg smashed, that's right. He'd got his leg busted. And then the third one, the other end, oh, I never see anything like it. It had, the blast had busted his thighs, you know, the thigh bone. It had busted them through, so both his legs were wrong way round. And I said to, I tried to make this officer comfortable, I said to this chap with his leg busted, I said, can I do anything for you? He said, no, kid, no. He said, I'll do it. Leave it alone, he said. I expect he knew I knew nothing. And this chap that with his legs twisted, I said to him, I said, can I do anything for you? No, he said, you can't. He said, just make me comfortable. Well, I dragged him up and sat him on a fire step as comfortable as I could. You know, he just sat there with his legs twisted around. And then this officer, I bandaged him up as well as I could, and he sort of directed me how to do it then. And that's how we settled down then for the rest of the day. I don't think, because it's a hell of a log.
Yeah, what about the one of the chaps actually eventually died, didn't he? Can you tell me?
Him with the twisted legs. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, what happened to him, as the day wore on, you know, this was morning. Well, in the afternoon, I kept lighting fags for it. Well, lighting fags, and in the afternoon, I could see he was getting groggy. And he said to... He called to the officer, only just a few yards away. He said, give me your revolver. And this officer, he knew what he wanted it for. This officer called me, he says, here's this revolver. He said, throw it away. So I threw it over the top of the trench out the way. Because he wanted to do himself in, I expect, this kid. And... So I kept lighting fags for him, and later in the afternoon he called again. I went to him, and he got his old fag tin out. Put a fag in his mouth, and he said, "Here, with his fag tin," he says, "Here, kid." He said, "You are this fag. See, you are these fags." He said, "I shan't want them."